Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Cinema Sommelier, where we, of course, taste test movies. I am Gary T. Moore.
And I'm Zachary Wachaleski. And today we're going to talk about Antoine Fuqua's 2001 gritty movie, Training Day. Training Day. First of all, I'm going to do this right now and say, spoilers alert.
Yes.
There will probably be spoilers. It's a 2001 movie. It was 20 years ago. Go watch it if you haven't watched it. Yeah. It's a good one. I definitely think it's one of the best for Denzel Washington. But description, I'll be pretty short. I think we'll sort of run into some of the action elements of the movie. But it's a movie with Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke. Essentially, it follows Ethan Hawke's character a little bit more as his first day on the job as a Los Angeles narcotics officer. His partner is Denzel Washington, who is a rogue detective. And it says on IMDb, who isn't what he appears to be. And that's essentially it. He's sort of learning. He goes through the longest and probably worst first day on the job that anyone could ever have.
Whew, yeah, I 100% already agree. I already agree with everything you've said. I will say off the bat, because I can't think of a lot more, this is one of my favorite takes place in one day movies. I know there are a few out there.
Does Groundhog Day count?
maybe. this movie has just so much stuff, and it's I've said this before in our previous episodes. This is like one of my go-to movies. It's such a simple, basically a simple story with, you know, it features the city of Los Angeles as a character I put in my notes, and it's as you said, so gritty. So gritty and dirty, and kind of opens your eyes on maybe how things could possibly work. I mean, I don't know the truth behind it. I assume there's something behind it, the way law enforcement works like that. Probably higher up. I don't know. I'm not a cop. Whatever. I don't want to assume or like put anyone on blast or whatever. But either way, they did a great job of telling this story.
I agree. I've never seen this movie, so I came into it completely blind, didn't know anything about it. Actually watched it with my parents, which, if you haven't seen this movie before, it's a very dark and very aggressive toned movie.
Yes.
There are a lot of curse words. I think there's like 200 something F-bombs that are dropped in this movie. It is not a movie that is safe for children, and not necessarily a family movie either. But I mean, I think we all enjoyed it, and it was a great acting role for Denzel. Like, I can't imagine a single other person who could have possibly played
absolutely
that rogue cop as Denzel Washington did.
Yes. 100%. And that's why he won the Oscar, right?
Right.
I'm going to, can we look up, as part of our notes, producers, production team, can we look up who he was up against for best actor that year to see best actor in a leading role is which what he won in the, I guess that would have been the 2002 Oscars. If we can look that up, that'd be fantastic. But yeah, he completely just, from the get-go, from the first minute you see him at the diner, you know, you're in for a thrill ride, right? And it's kind of this crooked way of going about things, but you know, he's all right. Look, I'm gonna side note with it. I recently found out that I was a Slytherin, right? And
okay,
and Slytherins get things done by any means necessary, apparently, is part of our qualifications. And I feel like Denzel in this movie, Alonzo, is Slytherin.
Oh, for sure. Without a doubt. Like, he is just that epitome of, like, he's intelligent, but also just, like, kind of devious and just will do what he wants to better himself. And that feels like that's pretty spot on.
What do we got? So, really quick, going back to earlier, Denzel won against Russell Crowe for A Beautiful Mind, Sean Penn, and I Am Sam, Will Smith in Ali, and Tom Wilkinson in The Bedroom. I'll be honest with you, I don't think I've ever heard of the movie The Bedroom. Maybe that could be put on our list, and we watch that later. But some great talent, nonetheless. Russell Crowe, Tom Wilkinson, Sean Penn, Will Smith. And he took it away. He took it away. It was so good. And the talent in this movie as well.
Right.
You know, of course, Ethan Hawke, who unfortunately did not win the Oscar supporting. That year. Yeah.
Right.
But you have so many. My biggest treat, one of my biggest treats in this was the amount of Los Angeles rappers that were in this movie.
Right. Yeah. You had what? Snoop. You had Dr. Dre.
Macy Gray was in this movie.
Macy Gray.
Macy
right.
Gray. Not really a rapper, but she's in the field.
A little out of the times at this point.
We'll give it to
her. I don't think many people know of Macy Gray.
No. But you got, you know, it's just Eva Mendez was in this movie. Not a rapper, of course, but.
Right. You had Terry Crews just standing around in the background, right? Like, you had people who were just like out of left field, not doing anything, but they ended up becoming big, well-known people. I wrote down a quote actually from my mom, not actually from the movie. And her quote was, "I remember not liking this movie because Denzel's a bad guy and I like Denzel." And I feel like that to me on its own is such an epitome of like maybe why this movie doesn't get some of the credit that it should have gotten.
Okay.
Because so many people love Denzel Washington. Like, I mean, I love Denzel Washington. I think he's phenomenal. He's been in so many fantastic roles, and he kind of plays some of the similar roles from movie to movie, but this one's different. Like, this one, he just plays this dark, gritty, like, you kind of cheer for him, but also don't like him at the same time type of person. And maybe that's just Denzel because you're carrying over that persona from previous movies. I feel like people don't like it because they love Denzel and they're like, I don't like seeing him in this dark way. Like, it blurs the line a little bit from my viewing of Denzel.
Before this movie came out, I mean, the movie right before that was Remember the Titans.
Right.
Right. And Remember the Titans, of course, beautiful movie, great message. We were talking about it the other day. It's so good. This one's different. It's a different,
very Denzel, different,
very different Denzel. But it's both, of course, great performances. But Training Day, as you said, hide your kids. Don't let your kids see this movie. it's just, sure. I mean, just such a journey.
Ethan Hawke smokes PCP by noon in this day. Like, it's just. And he does it like in the middle of an intersection with like a gun to his head from his partner.
He just stops in the middle of a Los Angeles intersection.
Yep. Some of the lines of like insults that Denzel slings, like, I don't know if they were scripted. I don't know if they were just like Denzel coming up with things. But like, I remember that one in the middle of the intersection, and pardon my language for viewers, cover your ears, but calls him a poop ass. And I just thought, who in their right mind is using that as an insult?
Oh,
and
my
I
God.
I absolutely loved it. I lost it.
Absolutely. It's such a, maybe it's an LA thing. I don't know. I've never been to LA, but yes, his one-liners, I want to know who's responsible for those. Because they were of just brilliant. I mean, David Ayer, I hope I'm saying that right. David Ayer, who wrote this movie, who also he appears to have written Suicide Squad, End of Watch, which is another, of course, law enforcement movie. Side note, there was a Training Day TV series. I didn't know that.
There was. Yeah, I never watched it. But I also had never seen the movie until now. And I don't know if it's worth a watch. So if anyone has watched both of those, let us know.
Yeah.
Go to our website, cinemasommelier@wordpress.com, and let us know how that TV show was.
Yeah, please. He wrote U571, Fast and the Furious. He was responsible for that screenplay. Training Day, Dark Blue SWAT, Harsh Times, End of Watch, Sabotage, Fury, Suicide Squad. So he's got a very, you know, kind of a niche market when it comes to writing. But it works. It works.
If he's responsible for that opening scene with Ethan Hawke and his family, though, then I was very confused. Like, I thought that was the tone that was going to happen from a writing standpoint.
Okay.
But it just, like, was to me, and I'll sort of dive into it. It felt a bit unnecessary of dialogue. Like, it felt very forced of like, all right, honey, I'm going to go off and I'm going to make a name of myself for my family and I'm going to get this badge for you. Like, it just felt like really, ugh, right?
Okay.
Like, there was nothing in that opening part that I felt was necessary. And like, the only dialogue that I loved was he wakes up and he sees his wife like breastfeeding their newborn. And it has to be like early. It's dark outside, dark in their room.
I think it's 5 o'clock. Said, yeah.
Right. He's like, what are you doing? And she just looks at him and goes, moo. And I'm like, that alone was like, okay, that was fantastic. But everything else is just like, why are you asking that question? Clearly she's breastfeeding your child. Like, what else would she be doing in that rocking chair with your child?
Well, here's the thing. Maybe he didn't see the boob and was just like, weren't you asleep? And I don't know. I think, see, yes, does the first scene go on just a smidge too long? Yes. But it establishes that he is a family man, which absolutely comes through time and time again within the show, within the movie.
It also establishes, so Denzel calls Ethan Hawke's character in the very beginning and asks, like, probing questions like, oh, do you have a backup gun? And oh, do you have this and that? And like, all of those things ended up being super relevant later on in the movie because Denzel has this plan of like, I got this new guy coming in. This is what I'm going to do today. Like, this is what I need to have happen. I need to know, is he going to have a backup gun? Because later on in the movie, I might have to kill him and I need to know if he's got a second gun on him.
Yeah.
So that way he doesn't kill me first.
Absolutely. Yeah. Denzel, you know, crosses those T's and dots those I's at the very start of everything. And even, there's even a brief moment where he's like, he gets in good with Ethan Hawke's wife. And you can hear that because there was a little like pause, a little laughter on the phone. And that just shows his, you know, conniving ways. And I think that's brilliant. I think even without seeing, even if you watch this movie and maybe you miss the credits, maybe you were under a rock in 2001 and didn't know who Denzel was. This sets up Denzel's character in 10 seconds. And I think it's perfect. And then, you know, going into the diner and his whole big monologue, not even, well, it's kind of a monologue in the diner, just, you know, getting interrupted reading the paper. And it's like, oh, this guy's kind of likable. And then you kind of see, maybe this guy is slightly a piece of trash, the way he's talking about like other like female police officers and all that kind of stuff. But as trashy as he kind of is, dang it, he still has this likability to him. Like, you're just like, why am I so drawn to you as this detective, as Alonzo, as this Slytherin? Like, why is that working so well?
It's the charisma of Denzel. Like, there's nothing else. If anybody else had played this role, like, think of all the biggest names that you could possibly think of to fill in there. Like, I mean, I think Morgan Freeman was originally thought to play the role. Like, there's some weird people who potentially were up for looking at this role. Nobody could have done it. Nobody would have won an Oscar for it. I'll tell you that. And so there's just so many things that I'm just like, yeah, like, Denzel had to play this role and he did it perfectly. But speaking of the diner scene, I want to point out like a little fun fact that I saw when I was researching it. That coffee shop in the beginning of the movie where Denzel and Ethan Hawke meet was also in a bunch of other movies. So it was also in like Seven, I guess, Gone in 60 Seconds, Ghost World, Catch Me If You Can. So that coffee shop is also probably just as famous as some of the people that were in that movie.
Yeah. Huh. I didn't know that. No. No, that's fantastic. I mean, and as we said earlier, like, it uses Los Angeles. It uses this, like, and I think I've said this before. It uses this yellow filter when shooting to show kind of the heat, the atmosphere that is Los Angeles, which is unlike any other, like, you can tell, right? It's usually like a yellowish for Los Angeles and like kind of a blue gray for New York City. And I think that that's a huge thing that plays a very large part in this movie. Ivan says it. Then I also go into how this movie is toxic masculinity and peer pressure. That is this entire movie, right?
Yeah.
It's all about the rookie trying to impress. But, like, I mean, what would you do? I mean, I don't think I'd smoke PCP, but then it's like you're trying to make the best for your family, right? It's the whole would you steal a loaf of bread for your starving sister or whatever. Like, what would you do? You have a gun to your head in the middle of an intersection in Los Angeles, and Denzel Washington, your superior, who can make your career in, what, 18 months, I think he said, is like, hey, you have to smoke this PCP, or you have to smoke this. He doesn't tell him it's PCP. I mean, like, what would you do? Would you do it?
Yeah, I think that's – honestly, that's the ultimate question of this entire movie. And it sort of sets off this chain of events as well, because, like, whether you'd say you do it or not, you've got a gun to your head. He stopped in the middle of the intersection. He's spouting vulgar things at you. And you're like, I mean, I guess it's just weed. I smoked some in high school. Like, I'll do it again.
Right.
And he does it. And then all of a sudden he's like, oh, that wasn't just weed. It had PCP in it. Now it's a much more serious thing. And he confronts him about it. He's like, I mean, we got the people on our side. Like, they're not going to drug test you. Like, and then it goes down this rabbit hole of, like, well, now he's reliant on Denzel. Like, he immediately turns to this, like, I kind of have to do what he says, because otherwise I'm going to get in big trouble, because
he owns me right,
right
now. Yeah,
right. And so the rest of the movie is just that slippery slope of, like, how do you get out now? And eventually it gets to the point where, like, all right, we're gonna say you killed this guy and basically frame you for shooting him, because you were here and everybody else said that you did it. So, and, like, what are you going to do about it?
And if you say no, oh, you have PCP in your system. Like, who are they going to believe?
Exactly.
It's such a methodically thought out day for Denzel Washington. And for those of you listening and that don't know, if you're, I don't know why you're listening if you haven't seen this movie, but they meet up with, one of Denzel's, and I'm putting air quotes around the word, friends, who is a former cop, and he is saving all this money to retire, and they have drinks with him and all that kind of stuff. And that guy is Scott Glenn, playing the role of Roger, and he's got a ton of money in this house in Los Angeles, and you can kind of tell that there's a bit of camaraderie between him and Denzel. And then later on, because apparently Denzel got in bad with the Russians, which honestly was a bit out of left field, I will be honest with you. He got in bad with the Russians and needed money, so they go and rob him, kind of botch the robbery, if you will, and his friend is then killed, and then they had to put it on somebody, so they put it on the new kid. Right. And then PCP is in his system. That's basically the whole long and short of most of that, which is just crazy. It's insane.
It's insane.
The way that works. It's such, I also get anxiety watching this movie, because I'm like, there are things that happen, maybe not to that degree, but there are things that happen like that to people, like, every day.
Right.
You know, it's
I think that's what is so scary about this, is, like, there's so many things that we as people, as citizens, are naive about, with how dark and shady certain other people of authority can be. And, like, again, not to say that people of authority take advantage of it all the time, but there are clearly people of authority that are coming out in the news all the time as having taken advantage of a situation. And that's exactly what this movie is about. Like, it turns into this like weird political undertoned movie in today's day than it may have in 2001. I don't know if this was as big of a topic point, but it's crazy to think about now in this dark and ominous sort of undertoned movie to think about how smart people in positions of power can take advantage of people who are beneath them.
Yeah, it's all about that power.
It's part of being human.
Yeah.
Right. But it's an insane, this movie, like if we think back to the day that Ethan Hawke has, right? Like he starts off his day. He's this like young, naive, really good cop. Right. And he goes to his first day on the, like, imagine going to your first day on the job and being like, I have to tell a story to my supervisor because he's mad that I interrupted his newspaper reading. And then he critiques you for a while. He gets you in his car. He makes you smoke PCP. Then you're high and you're trying to come down from it. He takes you to his like girlfriend's house, his adulteress Eva Mendez, and has you fall asleep on the couch with her son, their son. And then you wake up from that, you go back, and then you get taken to this shootout in a couple places. You get framed for murder. You like, there's just so much that goes on. And this whole thing happens in one day. I'm like,
yeah.
At what point do you quit? Like, I think I would have just walked away.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's all about the drive and determination. But I will say that his good intentions, his Ethan Hawke's good intentions, of course, saved him in this movie. Him being a good cop, no matter what, saved him in this movie. Because when he stops the girl, or when he stops the two bums in the alleyway with the girl, and he's got the wallet and all that kind of stuff, you don't know, but that's going to save his life later. Because when Alonzo goes to these guys' houses, who, you know, don't think the most of Alonzo, like the world does, although he thinks that he runs the world, they pull one over on him, and they're literally going to kill him until they find this girl's wallet. And it shows that, you know, you might not always get credit for doing good things, but do it anyway. Right.
Good karma situation, right? Like you've got Ethan Hawke, who's again that good cop, naive, but he's like, I'm here to help people. And so he does that, and all of that help ends up coming back to benefiting him. And then on the flip side, you've got Denzel's character, who's just like, I'm on top of the world, I'm King Kong, like nothing can stop me. It doesn't even matter who you are, you're nothing, I'll ruin you. And all of that, in the end, the people turn on him, bad things start happening. And he ultimately goes down in a blaze of fire with the Russians coming back to get him. So there's so many, like his anger towards people and thinking that he's on top of the world ruined him. And then Ethan Hawke was the exact opposite. So it's a movie of karma ultimately in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I do wish that it had touched a little bit more on the Russian situation, maybe in a flashback or something. They talk about it. Yes. And they also talk about it at the meeting of the higher ups, if you will, in that restaurant. And you can kind of tell where Denzel sits with everybody, right? I mean, it's all about bribery and money and all that kind of stuff. But you can see Denzel is being played as a pawn, and he doesn't see it that way. He doesn't want Ethan Hawke's character to see it that way. But it's absolutely evident that he's been played as a pawn. And it's crazy how, you know, once again, the power is blinding him, trying to make him see that, oh, you know, he's not King Kong, right?
Right.
He might be there. He might be in the jungle. Because they call it the jungle, the neighborhood. But he's not King Kong. He's, you know, he's in the community. He's not the biggest and baddest. So, I love this movie.
What is your favorite scene? I feel like we always do this, and I really enjoy the favorite scene parts. There's three that stand out to me as like the biggest and best scenes of the movie. But I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are.
Biggest and best scenes of the movie. I love a good, I love a good shootout, right? So I loved it when he goes back, right, and confronts Denzel in the room. And because that, to me, kicks off Act 3, right? That, to me, starts everything. Yep. And Denzel's got the gun under the bed, and they make sure the kid is safe. And, like, they do a little bit of, I guess you could call it parkour, just everywhere, all throughout this neighborhood. And it just culminates at the end. And it's just, it shows you the lengths that that Ethan Hawke's character will go to make sure that goodness is preserved.
I agree. That's definitely one of the biggest ones. And I don't know if you break that into two scenes, being in the house and then taking it outside, but that transition of, like, they're fighting in the house, he, like, swivels the shotgun under the bed and fires it out the door. Insane. Using your kid as sort of bait to try to help yourself get out of there is crazy to me.
Yeah.
And then, like, the crawl under the roof, the fight on the roof. Ethan Hawke eventually jumps down, I guess, from the roof onto his car. Like, it just is it's an insane arc and climax to the end of that movie. Definitely one of the best ones. To me, one of the, not even subtle, essentially, but one of the smaller ones that I think is the best scene is that poker game. That right. game where they go to this, like, Hispanic, like, gang house in the jungle. And he's like, oh, I got to go. I help them out. I help their family out. I give them stuff. And so he basically pays them with these things. He hides cash in this, like, blender in a box and is paying to get Ethan Hawke's character killed in that house. He's like, oh, well, man, I'm going to go hit the head. You stay here. I'll be right back. And Denzel leaves, and it just, like, waits on Ethan Hawke's character. And this slow progression through this movie is so awkward, so uncomfortable of them, like, them talking to him, then be like, let me see your gun, man. I got one right here. Let me see yours. Like, and it just turns into this, like, unsettling. Ethan Hawke's character is like, I don't really know what to do in this situation. I'm clearly not close to them. And this is, like, a weird situation for a cop to be right now. He ends up playing a poker game with them. They talk about a bunch of things, make him really uncomfortable. And then finally he realizes, like, oh, Denzel's not coming back. Like, right? He left me here. And, like, yeah. You can see when that triggers of, like, what do I do?
Yeah.
And then that ultimately ends with the violence, the chaos, and them trying to kill him in the bathtub before they realize that he saved the guy's niece from the two crackheads before they raped her. Again, crazy movie. That was the one where I'm just like, that was probably the best in my head, the best played scene of, like, it just slows down for a second and gives you that tension, that awkward pause.
It really adds to the structure that is the entire movie. You know, like, without that, it would just be a kind of action, money, drugs, whatever. But that's there's more method to it. And yeah, at 100%. Speaking of the way things are laid out, we should transition into scoring this bad boy. I'm gonna let you go first. On scoring this thing. Remember, we are doing it out of what, 100, right?
1 to 100.
1 to 100. Just like wine is, because we, after all, are sommeliers. So 1 to 100. Take it away.
This movie, again, first time seeing this, not really knowing what to expect. It's been 20 years since it came out. I think it holds up pretty well. It's dark. It's ominous. If that's what you're into, that's what you're looking for, it will absolutely hit that. Like, It, 7, Fight Club has this dark, gritty, political undertone movie. I thought it was great. Like, I really, there's some cheesy words that go on. The dialogue might get iffy. I like that it's all taking place in one day. I go as a good movie, maybe a great movie, not a perfect movie, kind of far from perfect. At like a 72 out of 100, maybe 73.
Okay. I agree with everything you said. I agree. You know, the grit is there. The action, the adventure is absolutely there. I'm a little bit different. I enjoy this movie. This is, as I said before and before and before, one of my go-to movies. This is always something I can put on because I've seen it before, but I will always find myself watching it. But it's not perfect. It's not perfect. I'm going to say, I'll give it like an 88.
Wow.
I'm going to give it an 88. Yeah. Cause, it's a solid B if we're going grade wise.
What kind of wine you got there?
So with that, I am going to have to go with, and I had it up a second ago, but then of course I was looking up other things. I'm going to have to go with Mad Dog 2020.
Okay.
And it apparently is a, you can get it in a wine form, but it says our grape wine is made with juice, luscious fruit infused with tasty flavors to create a unique variety of Mad Dog 2020 selections. It's also one of the hardest drinks I know. That's just one of, you know, it's like a, no offense to anybody, it's like a street drink, right? Like, this is the kind of drink that's in paper bags and all that kind of stuff. And I feel like that warrants this movie perfectly. I didn't know it was a wine, to be honest with you, until I just Googled it.
Right.
Or it has a wine selection or a wine variety to it. But yes, Mad Dog 2020, the wine of the streets.
Mad Dog 2020. I went a bit different. I love the name of that one. I went for just a generic type of wine, but I went with like a red Bordeaux wine. So in terms of looking at it, red Bordeaux's are medium to full bodied, but they have like this blackcurrant, plum, and earthy notes for aroma, but earthy notes of wet gravel and pencil lead. Things that I'm just like, they are just dark. You're what? Hitting the pavement. I love that description. I think that fits so well with this movie of just like, it's just on the street. The office is in the car on the wet dirt. And then the pencil lead. I mean, if you sub out pencil with like gun lead, then boom, we got this movie. So I went with a red Bordeaux, a nice dark, bloody red Bordeaux.
But pencil lead and gravel, that's, it works. It works flawlessly for this movie.
It works. It fits. All right. And I think last thing we got to do, spin that wheel.
Spin that wheel. Let's get it. Let's get it done. Okay. Do you want to announce this? You want me to announce this?
This movie is the exact opposite of what we are just talking about, but it is Runaway Bride. It is the 1999 film, so 2 years apart.
Yeah.
Film by Gary Marshall. And this was recommended by one of our lovely listeners. So if you want your movie to be listened to and watched and talked about on this, then please go to cinemasommelier.wordpress.com and contact us to recommend some movies that you love.
Or don't forget to hit us up on our Instagram at cinemasommelierpod. You can also suggest there. I would give my personal phone number, but I don't want to do that.
Too many fans.
Too many fans. Way too many. Way too many. I love Gary Marshall. So with that being said, grab your Nike running shoes.
And your bridal bouquet.
And
let's walk down the aisle.
Yeah, meet us at the altar, guys. My name is Gary T. Moore.
And I'm Zachary Wachaleski.
And thank you for listening to Cinema Sommelier. Maybe I'll get...
Oh, that was bad.